I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is November 29th, 2009. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's topic, parents jailed over baby's death. A couple who relied on homeopathic treatments for their eczema-stricken baby daughter have been jailed over her death. Thomas Sam, age 42, and his wife Manju, age 37, were found guilty of the most serious case of manslaughter by criminal negligence. The judge said their 9-month-old daughter, Gloria, had suffered helplessly and unnecessarily from a treatable condition and sentenced the pair to a total of 10 years behind bars. Thomas Sam got the longer sentence of at least 6 years because, as a homeopath, he had a double duty of care. Minutes after he was handcuffed, his wife Manju was taken into custody for the first time. She was jailed for 4 years. Their daughter Gloria was so sick with eczema that she constantly cried in pain, her skin broken and oozing fluid. Both parents were well educated, and the judge found they should have known better. They repeatedly rejected conventional medical treatment and instead opted for homeopathic remedies. Then, against doctor's orders, they took the baby girl to India, where her condition deteriorated. Judge Peter Johnson concluded it was the most serious case of manslaughter by criminal negligence. The couple wept as Justice Johnson detailed the pain their daughter would have experienced. He said they should have known just how sick she was. Instead, they delayed her treatment at the hospital because Manju said they were tired and jet-lagged. She died 3 days after being admitted to the hospital. She was a very sick infant with eroding skin. Her distress would have been apparent to her parents, Justice Johnson said. Dejected supporters left court still reeling from the judgment. I have a comment about that. Civilized human beings would have left the court reeling from the agony that this poor little child was needlessly put through. So they must be referring to the subhumans who supported the killers. Returning to the story, for Thomas Sam, his legal fight is not over as he faces separate charges accused of threatening his lawyers. Gee, what an all-around peachy guy. And now we move to the science segment. Today's topic, 200 years after Darwin's birth, scientists still can't agree on whether evolution and religion can happily coexist. It has been the year of evolution to coincide with the anniversaries of both Darwin's birth and the publication of On the Origin of Species. Richard Dawkins published The Greatest Show on Earth, The Evidence for Evolution. And Jerry Coyne, an eminent evolutionary biologist at the University of Chicago, wrote Why Evolution is True. Yet amid the ongoing celebrations, a new storm has erupted. This is not the usual battle between creationist fundamentalists and evolutionists. The latest ruckus has broken out among scientists and philosophers who accept evolutionary theory as the explanation for the emergence of life's diversity. Where they differ is on the public communication of science and evolution. Dawkins in particular is being rebuked for doing more harm than good to the public face of science. The basic claim, spelled out by the journalist Chris Mooney and the biologist Cheryl Kirschenbaum in their book Unscientific America, which was published in June, is that Dawkins presents an unnecessarily divisive choice. You can accept evolution and a scientific worldview more broadly and therefore reject religion, or cling to religion and sacrifice scientific understanding. My comment, that is not the choice Dawkins offers. You have created a false dichotomy. Dawkins attacks religion in a separate book, The God Delusion. Dawkins presents the evidence for evolution in his book, the greatest show on earth. In neither book does he tell anyone to accept evolution and reject religion. He merely presents the evidence for why he believes in evolution, and in his other book explains why he rejects religion. Everyone else is free to make up their own minds. Mooney and Kirschenbaum have been excoriated across the board for the poor level of scholarship presented in their book. Their opinions reflect their thinking, not the majority of skeptics. Returning to the article, this strategy, critics argue, alienates moderate religious people who might otherwise be receptive to scientific theory. Faced with a mutually exclusive choice between their private faith and the objective worldview of science, moderates will turn away from the latter, and science loses out. My comment: it is also important to realize that it is the moderates who lose out. Instead of being able to appreciate modern science, they are no better off than the peasants in the Dark Ages. The article continues, "It's not just Dawkins, Coyne, and all the new atheists, including the Darwinian philosopher Daniel Dennett, the neuroscientist Sam Harris, and the cultural commentator Christopher Hitchens, are charged with alienating people from science." I have to comment once again. New atheists is a term used by religious believers to refer to non-believers who no longer keep their mouths shut. Back to the article. Lining up against them is a group of accommodationists, including Mooney, an atheist, and Kirschenbaum, an agnostic, who believe that evolution and religion can live happily side by side, at least under an entente cordiale, if not in a mutually supportive relationship. My comment: you had better settle for the entente cordiale. It is impossible for two contradictory epistemologies to exist in a supportive relationship. They continue, "Dawkins calls accommodationism the Neville Chamberlain school of evolution, and its proponents the appeasement lobby. Yet it is the official line of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, and the National Center for Science Education, which is dedicated to promoting the teaching of evolution in American school curriculums." My comment: that is because they don't want you guys to start burning people at the stake again. Let's face it, that wasn't ancient history. It was fairly recent history. Continuing, "The accommodationist critique has at least two strands. One is increasingly common criticism that the new atheists are excessively mean to people of faith, militant in tone, and ironically fundamentalist in their non-belief." My comment: religious people claim atheists are mean and militant for no other reason than that atheists dare to voice an opposing opinion and back that opinion up with proof. If you want to see mean and militant, just keep watching the news for stories of how believers treat non-believers. I would call threatening people with eternal torture and calling them evil would qualify as mean and militant. Somehow, that obvious truth escapes you. Calling non-believers fundamentalist is the common religious attack that attempts to bring non-believers down to their own level. Believers use the same argument when they try to claim that science is just another faith system. The article goes on, "The accommodationist philosopher Barbara Forrest chastises the new atheists for combining rudeness with arrogance and closed-mindedness." My comment: she is wrong on all accounts. Rudeness and arrogance are far more likely to come from believers, as was pointed out just now. As for closed-mindedness, surely you jest. The article continues, "Like Mooney and Kirschenbaum, Forrest is no friend of creationism. She was a critical witness at a 2005 trial in Dover, Pennsylvania, in which parents blocked the introduction of intelligent design theory into state school curriculums. Forrest argues that new atheists should respect the personal nature of faith. My comment: it's not the personal nature of faith that is causing the problem. It is the public nature of faith by invading our classrooms with creation myths and forcing their political beliefs on the minority against the Constitution. That last statement is proven every time they lose in court on First Amendment cases, as they did in Dover in 2005. The article says, and nurture a sense of humility by recognizing that scientific evidence does not rule out existence of the divine. My comment: no one claims that it rules out the existence of the divine, but the discoveries of science have ruled out the possibility that the Bible is true. They continue, they should accept that there is a wide range of views and stop insisting that everyone follow the one true way of atheism. My comment: you have it completely backwards. It is religion that insists that everyone follow the one true way. Atheism only says there is no evidence for God, which there is not. It does not tell anyone it is the one true way. They continue, failing to do so only turns people off in droves. My comment: you are doing the same thing to me right now. They continue, yet it seems unlikely that the new atheists have been this damaging. They have been an identifiable group and social force for 5 years only, starting with Harris's The End of Faith in 2004. My comment: actually, rationalists emerged to battle the insanity of religious zealots beginning on September 11th, 2001. They continue, which was followed by Dawkins' The God Delusion in 2006. More significantly, polls indicate that the proportion of the U.S. public that subscribes to a creationist account of human origins has remained relatively constant for the past 25 years, hovering around 45%. The previous era, which advocated greater respect for religion, does not seem to have won over hearts or minds. So who is to say that taking the opposite approach will drive anyone away? The second thread of the accommodationist argument is that science, in fact, need not be inimical to religious faith. Eminent scientists from Galileo to Newton have found little trouble reconciling their personal faith with a scientific worldview. My comment: that's because they didn't have access to modern scientific knowledge that we now have. The article continues, perhaps the most prominent contemporary example is the geneticist Francis Collins, who ran the American arm of the Human Genome Project and was recently appointed head of the National Institutes of Health, the biggest funder of biomedical research in the United States. Collins is also an evangelical Christian who speaks publicly about his faith and its relation to science. Exemplars of this sort show that a single human mind can hold two divergent worldviews simultaneously, or at least accept the legitimacy of two very different ways of gaining knowledge about the world. My comment: that is also true of schizophrenics. Continuing, but there is another side to this story. Steven Pinker, a Harvard psychologist and an atheist, has voiced grave misgivings over Collins' appointment, not just because of his religious beliefs, but because of his public advocacy that atheistic materialism must be resisted. Collins believes in an interventionist God who, in his own words, gifted humanity with the knowledge of good and evil, which is the moral law, with free will and with an immortal soul. My comment: unfortunately, Collins does not require the level of evidence for his personal religious beliefs that he requires of his scientific beliefs. They continue, although in principle religious beliefs need not affect one's day-to-day science, in practice they might. Take research on the foundations of human sociality and ethics, currently one of the hottest areas in behavioral science. Researchers are probing these questions with evolutionary theory, comparative primate studies, and neurobiology, among other approaches. but no one invokes non-natural or non-material explanations. Are these instances of atheistic materialism to be resisted? Well, according to Collins, yes. Continuing, how would Collins' views affect the priority he might give to funding such research, if his prime belief is that ethics and the moral law are God-given? My comment, that is a question that proves his appointment was dubious at best, but as any adult has learned, qualifications can never compete with politics. Continuing, it is perfectly possible that he would accept the materialistic explanation of morality and just add that everything was set up by God in such a way that naturalistic processes were bound to produce a big-brained moral species. Time will tell if and how NIH funding changes under his leadership. It would be unfair to prejudge the case. My comment, I agree. Let's give him a chance and then hang him. Just kidding. If he can separate his religion from his work, as he apparently did in the past, then fine. If not, well... Continuing, in the meantime, there is little reason to suppose that the world will reach any meaningful consensus on the question of how best to engage the public with science in general, and evolutionary theory in particular. My comment, were it not for religion, there wouldn't be a problem. Everyone could just learn to appreciate the wonderful vault of knowledge that science has opened for all of us. Then again, science is not the only victim of religion. All of humanity has suffered its consequences. They continue, perhaps in true Darwinian fashion, those arguments and ideas best adapted to the modern world will prevail. My comment, if that were true, religion would have disappeared with Zeus. Obviously, this is one cancer that is going to require much more serious intervention. Their final statement, in an era of resurgent religion, it is far from clear which approach this will be. And my final comment, religion has no arguments, only deception designed to continue the enslavement of humanity to invisible ghosts for the benefit of those in government and for clergy. And now the arena goes abroad. Today we travel to Australia, where five were found guilty of plotting terror attacks. Five men have been convicted of conspiring to carry out terrorist attacks in Australia using guns and homemade explosives. The men, busted in raids in Sydney, were accused of plotting attacks to force the government to change its Middle East policy. One of the men trained at a terror camp in Pakistan, while others prepared for holy war at training camps in the Australian wilderness. Jihadist literature, weapons, and bomb-making materials were found in the men's homes. The five, who could now face life sentences, were found guilty after a 10-month trial, one of the longest in Australian history. Prosecutors said that while they hadn't been able to determine what specific targets the suspects planned to attack, they had sufficient proof that their plans involved extreme force and violence, including the killing of those who did not share their fundamentalist, extremist beliefs. And now for the final segment of the show, famous quotes. Today, Martin Luther, born 1483, died 1546 at the age of 62. Martin Luther changed the course of Western civilization by initiating the Protestant Reformation. Luther strongly disputed the claim that freedom from God's punishment of sin could be purchased with money. His refusal to retract all of his writings at the demand of Pope Leo X in 1520 and the Holy Roman Emperor Charles V at the Edict of Worms in 1521 resulted in his excommunication by the Pope and condemnation as an outlaw by the Emperor. Luther taught that salvation is not from good works, but a free gift of God, received only by grace through faith in Jesus as Redeemer from sin. His theology challenged the authority of the Pope, of the Roman Catholic Church by teaching that the Bible is the only source of divinely revealed knowledge, and opposed sacerdotalism by considering all baptized Christians to be a holy priesthood. Those that identify with Luther's teachings are called Lutherans. His translation of the Bible into the language of the people, instead of Latin, made it more accessible, causing a tremendous impact on the church and on German culture. It fostered the development of a standard version of the German language, added several principles to the art of translation, and influenced the translation into English of the King James Bible. His hymns inspired the development of singing in churches. His marriage to Katharina von Bora set a model for the practice of clerical marriage, allowing Protestant priests to marry. Much scholarly debate has focused on Luther's writings about the Jews. His statements that the Jews' homes should be destroyed, their synagogues burned, money confiscated, and liberty curtailed were revived and used in propaganda by the Nazis between 1933 and 1945. As a result of this and his revolutionary theological views, his legacy remains controversial. And now for the quotes from Martin Luther. The first quote, "Reason is the greatest enemy that faith has. It never comes to the aid of spiritual things, but more frequently than not, struggles against the divine word, treating with contempt all that emanates from God." That sounds like it came from an atheist rather than a religious believer. And now for the final quote from Martin Luther. "Whoever wants to be a Christian should tear the eyes out of his reason." Are you sure this guy's not an atheist?
Are you ready, Goose?